Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolecast. Bud, always excited to do any rendition of the Nolecast, particularly excited to talk to you tonight. It is our much-anticipated post-signing day look back. Hell of a day that it was, a little bit of a roller coaster of emotions. Ended well, a little bit of a rough period of time during the middle of the day there, and certainly capped off as positive a manner as it possibly could with the addition of Marvin Wilson. So we'll go through tonight, give you a couple minutes, 30 seconds, maybe 3 minutes, depending on how long the kid's been committed and how much previous conversation we've had. But we will do our best to give a total recap as to what happened today and a complete and full recap of the class itself. I will let people know that this has been a hell of a long day for you. You're up in New York City. You're in Manhattan right now with your nation, SB Nation duties. And we are recording rather late at night, but know how important this is to people and am real excited to have it ready for them as a day after signing day product.
And we are not adding in garbage trucks or sirens. Those are authentic. So if you catch those in the background, I apologize. I think most of y'all would rather have a podcast with them than wait till I get back home, which I'm actually not going to be home until I think Super Bowl Sunday. So, Ingram, let's get into this thing.
But we're fortunate to have the podcast that we do. We're fortunate enough to have the listenership that we do, as this was easily one of our more demanded podcasts that we've ever received as far as feedback on social media. And ultimately, we're really fortunate for the sponsor that we have. Louisiana Hot Sauce has been instrumental in us making this podcast kind of ultimately, it's not a finished product, but it's much more resembles the product that you and I talked about maybe putting together 5, 6, 7 years ago. So they've been just a partner, supportive, and leadership that they provided has been instrumental in what this has ultimately become. And like I said, we've still got a lot of plans to grow it. But Louisiana Hot Sauce has been an absolute driving force at that. Want to thank our listenership again for the feedback that they've provided on social media and the interaction that they've had with them. And look, it's a really nice recruiting class at Florida State, and it's really nice for us to be able to plan for the future and be able to bring the type of product that we've always wanted to, and a large part of that is because of the sponsor that we have.
Absolutely. Louisiana Hot Sauce has made this all possible. You know, Ingram, Florida State started the day hot, cooled off a little bit, and then it was like the recruiting gods just gave them another little hearty shake to finish the day off there. Nice little pattern. And that reminds me of Louisiana Hot Sauce, because Louisiana Hot Sauce is just hot enough. It's not too hot. It's not one of these hot sauces that's trying to impress you with, oh, the hottest hot sauce and all that stuff. It fills your needs for hot sauce. And you know what? Recruiting is all about filling needs with talent. Louisiana Hot Sauce is a need filled with a talented hot sauce.
All right, bud. A thank you, as always, to our friends at Louisiana. Had a pretty good time doing that one, I have to say. But let's just take a look back at what the day that was for Florida State National Signing Day. I mean, a lot of optimism going in to the final 48 hours. A legitimate hope, a legitimate thought process that existed with a decent amount of fan base was that they could potentially go 5 for 5 with the remaining five prospects on the board. That didn't happen. I would say that that was probably an unrealistic possibility to begin with. But anytime you've got kids left on the board, fans are probably going to, and not just fans, everybody surrounding the process may think that their prospects or their percentages are a little bit more favorable than they actually are. So Florida State by no means struck out, added two really significant additions. The Leonard Warner kid out of the Metro Atlanta here, that was more or less expected. And then the big get at the end of the day, bringing Marvin Wilson, the 5-star defensive tackle from Houston.
Yeah, man, it was a wild ride for Florida State fans today. They started off pretty happy getting Warner, finished off really happy getting Marvin Wilson. Edgar, let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard Gene Deckerhoff say, touchdown Florida State, Now, that is an 8-point touchdown because he signed and committed on National Signing Day as opposed to committing in June and then signing on National Signing Day.
I'm unfamiliar of points counting more dependent upon when kids sign or commit. I see your point there.
As somebody who makes, you know, a decent chunk of their money on National Signing Day, I'm not going to poo-poo the concept of National Signing Day. It is important, and it does show your ability to close as a staff, which Florida State did today with mixed results. However, if you're going to grade the class, you have to grade the class in totality. You don't grade the class based on the close, right? Otherwise, we'd be giving Florida's class an A+ when it's not anything close to that. And we'd be giving Miami's class like a D when it's not anything close to that. Mm-hmm. Florida State, I think, probably had like a C- close today. You know, they missed on their two receiver targets. They missed on Levi Jones. But they got, I think, the better of the two linebacker prospects, and they got the number one kid on their board, the number one uncommitted player in the country in Marvin Wilson. They beat Ohio State, they beat Oklahoma, they beat LSU. That, to me, if you're only going to get two of the five, well, getting Marvin Wilson is really the one you got to have. I'd rather have the two FSU got than three that didn't include Marvin Wilson.
Yeah, I think that's a good perspective, and the Jones kid is an interesting situation. Best of luck to him out at USC. I mean, I'm certainly not accusing people of making anything up. I think Florida State was confident that they were going to get Ruggs, but look, man, getting a kid out of Montgomery, Alabama, to turn down an offer from Tuscaloosa is just... you know, I'll believe it when I see it. And it's just not going to happen more times than not. Hell, not just more times than not. For the most part, it's really not going to happen. I mean, that may be a once in a decade, a once in a 15-year type of thing where you're able to go in and get a kid like that. So I realize how many wide receivers Alabama signed. I realize the style of offense that they play is not too conducive with signing four of the better wide receivers in the country. Ultimately, more times than not, it comes down to physically where the kid grew up, what type of setting, kind of the culture that surrounds that, and getting a kid out of Montgomery, Alabama, to choose you over Tuscaloosa is not a battle that Florida State fans, in retrospect, probably should have ever been too optimistic about.
Now, I totally understand what you're saying, and you do have to use history as your guide. I will say that other staffs outside of FSU and Alabama got the impression from Ruggs that he wanted to go to Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of do the math as far as other teams that were actually recruiting him, Auburn, Florida, kind of figure out who I'm talking about here. You know, that didn't happen. Henry Ruggs went to Alabama. But let's talk about the class in totality here. Five-star recruits, 8 4-star recruits, the number one player at his position, I think a couple different spots, the number one player in how many different states? You know, Cam Akers, number one in Mississippi.
Right. If you credit Kane Doe as Maryland, then you have five.
Marvin Wilson out of Texas, number one. Laybourne, a running back. Yeah. Hamza out of North Carolina. You signed the number one player in five different states? That's crazy. They did a heck of a job on this class. You know, I tweeted out this morning. I said, look, Florida State could close nobody else today at all and still finish ahead of Florida and Miami. And no, that's not your only competition, but they literally would have had a top 10 class had they gone 0-for on the day. And I think that speaks volumes as to the job that the staff did throughout the process. It's a really good class, man. They got it's top heavy as far as your superstars, but that's okay. We discussed last year about this time that, you know, maybe about the only thing that 2016 class was lacking was the really elite level superstar type kids. It just had a lot of great depth. This class has, you know, more questions at the bottom, some higher upside kids, and some super high upside kids at the top. Cam Akers, Josh Kando, Sanford Samuel, Cyrus Fagan, Hockman, McKitty, and Adonis Thomas all got enrolled early, too. I mean, I think that gets lost on a day like National Signing Day. It's why we actually, on Tomahawk Nation, took and devoted Monday to the early enrollees, because I didn't want to get that lost in the shuffle. Those are your most important players in this class. Because if you early enroll, the chance that you actually contribute as a true freshman goes up a ton. That's a big deal. And Florida State did a good job of getting those kids enrolled early. Obviously, they'd like a DJN, but that didn't happen. Still, seven, that's a really nice number right there. Where do you want to start before we get to positions?
I think I want to just touch on one more thing that you just said there, and that is it's true when you look at just the class, the two classes from kind of a 20,000, 30,000 foot view, and what that I mean is the class that they just signed today and the class that they signed last year, they really do complement each other well. Last year was just depth across the board, so instrumental at really stacking depth at positions that you needed to. And look, this class is well spread out. Offensive line is one area that's going to jump out to somebody immediately. But remember what they did last year. Other than offensive line, this class is pretty well distributed. But I think it complements last year's class. When you look at individual positions and you look at styles and how they compare to the guys last year, but really just from a depth and numbers perspective, last year's class was just a lot of consistent four-star prospects. This year's class certainly have some really highly thought of kids, but you also have some real difference makers, four of the more impactful players in the country are headed to Tallahassee. What, you signed three out of the top five? That's hilarious. I mean, that is a ridiculous how much elite talent that you're able to stack in one particular class, and it really complements what you did last year with stockpile and just blue chip prospects in general.
Exactly right. It is important to look at recruiting classes in sort of a two-year window, because pretty much any two-year window, you need to address pretty much all positions, and I think Florida State has done that numerically for sure. I think FSU's coaches were very happy with the signing class. Now, there's a natural tendency to kind of let a close or lack of close dictate, but man, to get Marvin Wilson, especially in a year, I mean, we talked about this. This was a bad year for defensive tackles. Really not a good one, man. And they get, their lowest rated defensive tackle this year was still a top 25 DT nationally. Mm-hmm. They get a top 10 DT nationally in Jalen Parks, and they get the number one DT nationally in Marvin Wilson, who, if he gets in better shape, I think could be a really damn good football player for them. And maybe early, if he comes in with the right mindset, ready to work, and drops a little baby fat. He's carrying a little bit right now, but that's not as important as long as he loses a little bit. And they can, those Tallahassee summers have a way of doing that as long as the player wants them to. Let's compare this class real quickly to Miami and to Florida and nationally. You want to just give a little national perspective on this?
I think we should. I think people enjoy that, and I think it's a conversation worth having.
So, okay, we said all along, nobody's going to catch Alabama and Ohio State. That proved to be true. Bama ended up one, Ohio State ended up two. And we also said that Georgia's having a spectacular class. They ended up three. And look, we all remember Jimbo's first full signing class. That 2011 class ended up being pretty damn good. USC was the one threat, I think, to really overtake Florida State from behind, right? And what was our line? We said, look, you got to watch out for USC here because they might just not have any legitimate competition out west. That was kind of prophetic, man. They swept today. Did USC lose a single kid that they were trying to close on?
They went recruiting 6-6. Yeah,
they're not recruiting against elite programs out there. They're recruiting against really good programs. But USC has a gear that no team west of the Rocky Mountains can get to, and they showed that today. I mean, they beat Florida State for Levi Jones, but man, out west, They got Greg, and they got Lewis, and they got Fallow, and they got Jay Tufel. Just nobody put up real competition for them. that's kind of like a return to how it was maybe a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
They pass FSU on the 247 rankings. Michigan keeps a very slim lead over FSU. I think 2.1 points, which is not much at all. Florida State has a higher recruit average than the Wolverines as well. And look, this is an excellent class for FSU. You know, you asked, do they have national championship level talent? Yeah. I mean, look, you got to stay healthy. You got to coach it up. But they certainly have enough to get there and let the chips fall as they may with the recruiting they've done this year and then also last year. Now, if I scroll down a little more, I find the Gators, who actually had a pretty good close. They finished number 10 nationally, and we thought they might close and, you know, poke some fun at them earlier this week with you know, some jokes about their class, how it was. And they did close well. They ended up with 11 4-stars. But it looks like there might be an error here. I'm not seeing anybody registered in the 5-star category for Florida. Are you seeing this, Ingram?
I didn't see that. I was keeping one eye out for it today, but didn't see him. Didn't see him put a mark in that category.
It also looks like they only signed one top 100 player nationally. Huh. How many did FSU sign? Let's take a look at this. That's got to be some kind of error. I was told Florida's class was actually better based on their clothes, but well, damn. Ingram, Florida State signed 6 players in the top 100 nationally. The Gators signed one.
One, yeah. Huh. Florida State signed 3 players in the top 5. Florida signed one guy in the top 100. That's a decent name. Encapsulation and comparison of those two classes. Yeah.
That's a help. People will share the hell out of that on Facebook. That is definitely potentially being made tomorrow morning when I wake up. Miami, also I thought brought in the class that addressed their needs with some talent, but they lost some guys down the stretch today. They end up with 10 4-stars, 14 3-stars, number 13 ranking nationally. I think both those schools actually did a good job. I don't think you can say it was a great job. Neither of them landed enough elite talents, I don't think. But Florida State is still the kings in the state. Yeah. And for, I think, the entirety of Jimbo Fisher's time, still had the best recruiting class in the ACC.
Florida's class, I think maybe in a couple years we can look at that class and maybe draw some comparisons to some of the Florida State classes in the mid-2000s where they added some higher-ranked kids. That were, you know, less than absolutely desirable. We'll see how that plays out. Good close for them. I agree. And, you know, if that's the best finish that you've ever had in program history and that that propels you all the way up to the number 10 spot, then I'll absolutely let UF own that and have that be their silver lining for today. Miami's class, I thought, was a step in the right direction. Didn't have the close that they wanted to. Particularly like the wide receiver that they got out of East St. Louis. But Miami has some talent there, and that was very much a step in the right direction for Richt and where they want to go. But neither of those classes is something that immediately jumps out as a threat to Florida State. As you rightly said, they are and they remain firmly atop kind of atop the mountain that is the world of Florida, the state of Florida, when it comes to college football.
I think I think Florida really this class could really help Jim McElwain get these unjustified attacks on his job security and kind of get those by the wayside. The guy has won the SEC East two times in a row, man.
Go ahead and extend him. Two SEC East champions and the best close and program history. So I would if that doesn't bring about a contract extension, I don't know what will.
He signed 36% blue chips over his first three classes. That sounds like maybe need a 3 to 6 year extension in Gainesville to me. I know. I bet you FSU would be very excited to see him extended if that were to happen. No, look, they did it. I think you can make an argument if you don't think that he's the answer in Gainesville, that this close helps out FSU, because if they had stayed at like 35 or had finished outside the top 25,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Cool. That seed is Warm. And
then, yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. Once you start to struggle, and then all of a sudden struggling bleeds into recruiting, the proverbial hourglass has been turned over, and your time is going to run out sooner than later. I mean, I completely agree with you that if you're of the mindset that McElhane is not a real threat, and the best thing that for Florida State would be to have him, you know, settle down and put down roots in Gainesville, then this class was a nice step in that direction. Completely agree. You go sign in the nation's 31st class at a place like Florida, it's you're a dead man walking at that point.
It's not Wisconsin. It's not Kansas State. The Bull Gators, they follow this stuff.
Clemson. You know, it's I don't mean to step on you there, but a lot of times you talk about the importance of beating your rivals and just kind of the inner office interactions that you have and just the people that you see, whether it's your the your wife's best friend's husband or just the people you interact with. I would say that at times results on the recruiting trail are almost as important for that as actual game results themselves. Now that's a twisted way of looking at it, but it is kind of along that same line of pride. And you're right, the Bull Gators are not going to stand behind anybody that's finishing outside the top 20, 25 when it comes to national recruiting rankings.
I completely agree. That's a great point here. Now, Clemson, they actually finished lowest of FSU, Florida, Miami, and then obviously Clemson, but they had the fewest scholarships to give. They only had 14 scholarships. They signed 2 5-stars and 9 4-stars. So really an elite-level class in terms of quality. They just didn't have the numbers. I think they're actually going to contend for the number one class in the country next year. That'll be a hell of a thing to follow FSU and Clemson as they sort of distance themselves from the rest of the ACC. And, good for the ACC, too. You had a couple other nice ACC classes here. Virginia Tech ended up with a decent class, 5 4-stars, some decent high-level 4-stars there. Certainly Devin Hunter leading the way. Miami, like we said. North Carolina was okay. I think Louisville was okay. It was important, though, I think, to see Virginia Tech and Miami take that step forward if the actuality was going to match the narrative, which was that all these coaches were so much better and the league was going to get better. The league will get better if the talent gets better, as well as if the coaching gets better. I think the coaching did get better, and I think the league just got more talented today as well. So
I think that's a fair way of looking at it, and it's just a continuation of the ACC raising their game. And, there were times back in the day when I remember when Florida State would get pinched with a 12- or 13-person recruiting class, and you just have to make the most of it and sign as many good kids as you can, and that's what Clemson did. And agree with you, Clemson will be right there with their nose trying to edge everybody else out in all likelihood for one of the nation's best recruiting classes in 2018. But hopefully that was a decent little encapsulation of what went on in the conference and what went around in the state. Why don't we go ahead and shift our focus purely to Tallahassee and start our position conversation. And with that, why don't we go ahead and move to the quarterbacks. Bailey Hawkman, kid out of Metro Atlanta here, has been committed for a long time. He's already on campus, early enrollee. And then the second prospect, later committing of the two, James Blackman, 6'4" quarterback out of Belgrade, and probably a little bit more of the raw entities of the two, but perhaps possesses the higher ceiling of the two prospects that Florida State's immediately bringing in.
Yeah, I think Florida State did an excellent job in this class of identifying that it needed to bring in at least one quarterback. Then you lose Malik Henry, so you knew you need to bring in two. With Bailey Hawkman, you have a guy very athletic, can run around, can scramble, can make some plays, gets the ball out pretty quick. Does he have the biggest arm? No, it's not a weak arm. I don't want people to think that. It's just not necessarily a howitzer. Some people have made sort of a left-handed Christian Ponder comparison. I know you had an interesting comparison, not necessarily in talent, but sort of in style of play.
In style of play, and this is said tongue-in-cheek, and I make fun of recruiting services who give you wild hyperbole all the time. But if you think about just the style of play Steve Young is not ridiculous. I mean, 6 foot two, left-handed quarterback. That's always the first direction people are going to go. But I would say that he has all the throwing power that's required to be really successful. Again, he's not somebody that's going to throw himself out of a lot of problems. He's not somebody that necessarily is going to sail a ball 65 yards plus downfield. But his arm is strong enough for certainly to be successful. And you said a word there that maybe not everybody associates with him. A really good athlete, really fluid. Started, was forced into starting as a true freshman, as though they're redshirt freshmen in high school. But as a freshman in like the state semifinals, after a series of injuries, just got thrown into the spotlight and handled it well. And perhaps that's appropriate. That could be a kid who theoretically could be your backup quarterback going into next year. So a guy who's been thrown onto the big stage, a coach's son, a kid who didn't want to play, I think, basketball or baseball his final year. So he ended up taking up golf and was good enough to make the golf team. Just a heady kid, a smart kid, and somebody that I think could be somebody that in 3 or 4 years, a lot of people didn't necessarily place the signing day hype with what you see and what you ultimately get from on-field production.
Absolutely. And then also with James Blackman, your three-star kid who down the stretch Louisville pursued very hard, West Virginia, University of Florida. I think that the kid FSU's getting here in Blackman is better than the quarterbacks that all those schools signed. 6 foot five, maybe 165, so he's a beanpole right now. And is going to need some time in the program to put on a significant amount of weight. But the arm is big. He has a knack for making big-time throws. Pretty athletic. I actually first saw him, and I didn't even realize it was the same kid until I went back and looked at the stuff I was shooting. I think I saw him 3 years ago in a 7-on-7 tournament playing for a 7-on team that has a lot of the kids from the Belgrade area. And I was kind of impressed. I was like, wow, I need to keep an eye on that kid. And sure enough, shows out at FSU camp and has a strong senior season, despite the fact that he's you guys think DeAndre Francois gets hit a lot and is running for his life. Watch James Blackman's huddle on TomahawkNation.com. Oh, my gosh. He gets just constantly, immediately pressured. There's just no pass block at all. And he won't blame any of his offensive linemen. He'll deny it if you ask him about it. But he has to make so many plays just with Houdiniacs. I think he has a very high ceiling as a quarterback prospect, and I'm excited Florida State signed him.
He definitely has a high ceiling. Somebody that, like you mentioned, Florida State had to hold off a couple schools, and one coach in particular that's pretty good at evaluating talent. And I think the two prospects really complement each other well. You have the product that's a little more polished, a little more ready from day one. And then ultimately you have a project is not a word that I want to associate with a kid, but ultimately you have a piece here that in a couple years could end up being really special. So I think they complement each other well. We've talked about, look, neither of these kids are five-star prospects or anything like that, but two really solid additions at the quarterback position and kids I think you can work with. And if you want to have a conversation about five stars, yes, there aren't any five stars in this class. But I don't know that any big national kid is going to necessarily be not look at you because these two kids necessarily are on your roster from just when they start to evaluate you moving forward. So and all things considered, a good situation at quarterback, not what you would expect anything different from a Jimbo Fisher team, but two really solid additions for 2017.
Absolutely.
All right, Bud, if you had really two solid additions at quarterback, then you have three really home runs here. Any other year, normally when you sign a top 10 back in the country, that is kind of the headliner for your class. When you look at that position, well, this year Florida State signed three, signed a kid that's number one or number two, depending on where you look, but really a special talent, and then two other kids that are really big-time national recruits, and all three of them complement each other well. And go ahead and let you break down the three different prospects that Florida State's bringing in.
Yeah, guys, if you want like a 15, 20 minute breakdown on Cam Akers, we did several around Christmas time and the new year. And I got to see him several times in person all week at the U.S. Army All-America game. The number one running back in the country out of Clinton, Mississippi. They beat out Ole Miss. They beat out Ohio State. Thank God Ohio State is that far away from Clinton, Mississippi. Otherwise, we may be having a little different conversation. Beat out LSU. Beat out a number of other top schools. And they get a guy who, on Tomahawk Nation, we've made the comparison, and actually Cam Akers has made the comparison himself. Zeke Elliott is a very similar style runner. Guy with excellent top-end speed, more of a straight-line guy than Dalvin Cook was, if you want to make that comparison. I don't know if he's quite as loose in the hips, but probably a little more willing early on in the career to run between the tackles and run somebody over. Just a guy that if you're looking for somebody to replace Dalvin Cook, and that it's going to be so hard to do. If you got to pick one high schooler in the country to do it, I think it's Cam Akers.
If the list isn't long if it's not Cam Akers, bud. Just an absolutely special talent. As you mentioned, yeah, you can go back right around Christmas. If you really wanted to encapsulate all of our conversation about Cam Akers, we talked a decent amount of time devoted towards him in June, July, and August as well. So somebody that we've spent a decent amount of time in a way, and this is kind of a contradictory statement because you already had the two other kids committed to you, but Akers is one of the pieces, and we'll talk about some of the other ones tonight as well, but it's one of the pieces that really gave you an ingredient to make this class special. So he's as excited as I personally have been for a running back prospect in a long time. This is something that we've talked about and recommended previously, but if you haven't consumed it, would highly encourage you to spend the 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes or so that is the highlights of the Mississippi State Championship game, in which he scores a variety of touchdowns and does it in ways that just are quite out almost humorous in how much of a superior talent that he is to the rest of the field. And that's a pretty decent level of ball that you're watching there. So Akers is just a special part of this class and somebody that we'll probably spend a decent amount of time talking about throughout the summer, as he has a very real chance of seeing snaps as soon as the Alabama game.
Next, we have Zaquandre White, 4-star running back, kid who I know real well, out of North Fort Myers High School, 6'1", about 6'1", maybe 6', 210, guy that could probably get even a little bit bigger, a taller, angular back with really good size, very tough runner, physical guy, wants to run people over, not afraid of contact. But when you have a back like that, it's always interesting to see what else can they do. He has some wiggle. I think he has really good balance, and he also catches the football extremely well. That's something that people can look forward to with Zaquandre White. He has some of the best hands in this class, and you don't always see that from your bigger backs. A lot of times that's kind of your smaller guys who run routes and catch the ball a lot. White actually catches the ball very well.
White is a really intriguing prospect. All three of these guys complement each other well, but he's north of 200 pounds. Again, a guy that if you go and you watch some of his tape, just a very instinctive runner, not shy about putting his shoulder down at all when he needs to. A guy that I know he's from North Fort Myers there, and somebody you've watched for a while, and you're more informed about him than I am, but just another really special part of this class, and again, any other year would normally be your headliner when it comes to running back. It just so happens that Florida State signed three of the nation's best at running back, and with that, we'll move to the third individual, Mr. Kalon Laybourne out of Virginia Beach there, bud. Give us your thoughts on a running back that is anywhere from 4 to 5 stars, depending on the service that you look at.
I'll keep it real simple for FSU fans out there. Remember Chris Thompson? Add 15 pounds, basically. Mm-hmm. Balance, agility, acceleration, good vision, a little bit shorter of a back, you know, more of like a 5. He's probably 5'10", just eyeballing him. But he's thick, and he really does a great job of seeing through the hole. I think he's close to 200 pounds, man. all these three running backs FSU has signed and have good size. They're going to be physical runners. LeBourn maybe not the most physical of the trio, but he's not like a scat back type. I think mm-hmm. he's more physical than people give him credit for. Probably the most wiggle out of any of these three guys. Like the guy that's most likely to leave you just kind of grasping at air as a defender, it's going to be the guy from Virginia here. Also, the dude who at the opening over the summer committed while pulling up in the Lamborghini with FSU on it. And, of course, Gators fans were all convinced that was some sort of recruiting violation. However, it was not. It was part of a TV show. So I think he just starts off as one of FSU fans' favorites immediately just because of that recruiting stunt.
He's up there automatically with me just for that and that alone. Again, we had our chuckle about this, but the fact that anybody thinks a school is going to publicly televise a recruiting violation is really hilarious to me. And for that, I will always have a nice place to start with my recollection of what Kalon LeBourn ends up being in his time in Tallahassee. All right, bud, let's go ahead and talk about a kid that's been committed for a good amount of time, somebody that we knew was going to be in this class and is not necessarily going to embrace the role if you tell him this, but a guy really for all intents and purposes is probably the number one slot receiver in this class, and a guy who you don't want to say this a whole lot with wide receivers, but somebody that has a skill set to at least put the idea of early playing time in play. One of the more sought after pieces in this class. But a guy that committed to Florida State early, and DJ Matthews is the wide receiver out of Jacksonville that we're talking about, and is a really large piece of this class in and of itself.
Now, Ingram, you know he's going to find you on Twitter and talk smack to you about calling a slot. He does not want to be called a slot, even though I think we both agree early on, if you're 5'10 and a half, 5'11, 155-ish, you probably stand the best chance to play early in your career in the slot. But DJ Matthews is just a baller. That's the best way you can put it. If you want the more in-depth breakdown, the agility is off the charts. The ability to stop and start, the acceleration is really special. That's how he creates separation from defenders. Kind of has that like thing, looks like he's just kind of like dancing on his tiptoes out there, and everybody else is kind of moving in slow motion, like Rashad Green had. But he also has really good hands. DJ catches the ball. I think because he's so flexible, he's able to go down and get low throws. He's a natural hands catcher. He doesn't look, he doesn't let the ball get into his chest before he grabs it, which is great. Has great leaping ability. I know if you go on the TomahawkNation.com Facebook page, you can see a video we have of him making a great one-handed catch over a defender from a 7-on event 2 years ago. He's done that a lot. Obviously, he played quarterback in high school, much like Cam Akers did, the running back we discussed earlier. DJ's just a guy you want in your program. I mean, he is just a tremendous football player. If he was 2 inches and 20 pounds larger, he would be a no-doubt five-star in the conversation for the number one recruit in the country. As it is, if you're 5'10 and a half and 155-ish, and you're still a top 50 prospect nationally, I think that right there speaks to everybody's recognition of his ability. Like, for you to be that size, yet that highly rated, really shows, I think, everybody just what you can do at that size. Now, Tamori and Terry is a kid I'm very interested in. I haven't gotten to see him play much in person, but 6'4", 205, 208 pounds. Man, it last couple cycles, Auden Tate, Keith Gavin, now Terry, they're going out and they're getting some big receivers. That is what they had to do, and that is what they are doing. Now, I don't think Terry's just a big guy. Certainly on his film, he runs kind of mostly go routes, and that's one of the issues he's going to have to adjust to as the college game comes, learning how to run more routes, different routes, unlocking that hip flexibility to be able to sit down and run a variety of routes. But he's a size, speed, projection, upside type player. Out of Turner County there, Ashburn, Georgia, very small high school, very small area. I mean, not a very big classification. of high school football in Georgia, but certainly a guy who has tremendous upside. And that's a dude you want to get in your class and you want to get him in. And look, do you expect anything out of him year one? Not necessarily, but down the line, that could be a superstar type player when you have that type of size and athleticism. We just got to see how the other parts of his game will develop.
A great piece to add to the program. 6'4", so north of 200 pounds. A guy that is going to be a couple years, but somebody that you just love to have in your program. You love to have that type of body in your receiving core. And it's a piece that that Florida State fans, I think, be really excited about. A guy that you didn't necessarily know about until a couple months ago, or at least most people didn't. But a combination of a small ball as far as the size of classification that he plays, and just how rural parts of Southwest Georgia are. And he and his teammate both were kind of undervalued. Mix that with a little bit of academic uncertainty, and that's how you get a 3- or 4-star prospect that more or less flies under the radar until November or December of his senior year. So Terry's a great piece. Nice little win for Florida State to be able to go and secure his talent, and a guy that in a couple years I think could be a pretty large part of the wide receiver position.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Bud, we'll move the conversation now to tight ends. Florida State bringing in two kids. One gentleman by the name of Alex Marshall, somebody we've talked a good bit about, committed, been committed for, 7 or 8 months now. And his high school tape, I would encourage you to go watch it. If you haven't already seen it, it is absolutely humor, and just it's hilarious to watch this 6'6", 6'7" character just run through. It honestly looks like a like really talented high school athlete was let loose in like an 8th grade football practice or something like that. So go witness that. A raw kid, obviously hadn't played against great competition, but another big body that Florida State's done a really good job of in numbers in general in bringing in some pretty nice pieces at the tight end position over the past couple years. And Marshall is the first part of a two signing addition to this class.
Ingram, have you ever seen like a dad just destroy his kids and like pool basketball?
Or, yes, or, like, I know. Like, I know what you're talking
That's
about.
That's what Marshall's tape looks like. He looks like he's playing against like little kids, and in some ways, he is playing against a bunch of little people. However, he makes them look terrible, which is what an elite player should do. Florida State went up to Massachusetts. They got Alexander Marshall. I'm going to give him the full 6'7". All right. Mm-hmm. I've seen him in person. I think he's got at least like a foot of neck. So I'm going to give it to him. 6'7", 240. Probably has the frame to be 270, 275-ish, I think. I'm going to keep this one nice and short for you. If FSU fans remember Kaz Porowski, I think that is what Alexander Marshall would compare to. Maybe a little bit narrower, maybe a little more athletic, maybe not going to be quite as big as Porowski ended up being, but that's what you're looking at here. Guy who is going to win with length, going to win with the ability to present a large catch radius, and should be able to put his hand on the ground and help you in the run game as well, sealing off the edge.
I think that's a good point of comparison, Bud. Somebody that we'll watch Marshall. He's a prospect that has a decent amount of upside, and just good to give Tim Brewster another piece. And it's somebody that you don't expect to see immediately. A guy that you can put in the weight room, talk about some of the weight that you just discussed, adding to his frame, see how he carries that weight, and in year two or three has a chance to be an impactful contributor. Maybe a prospect, a little bit more undersized, more agile, maybe a little bit more threat in the downfield passing game. Trey McKitty, IMG prospect, another IMG prospect here. And just talk about what the 3- or 4-star prospect potentially could project to.
Yeah, I'm a big Trey McKitty fan as well. That's a guy you want coming off the bus, right? You talk about your get-off-the-bus kids that make an impression physically. Man, Trey McKitty is jacked. He got a lot bigger between his junior and senior year. in that IMG Academy weight program. Look, a little more athletic than Marshall, obviously not quite as long. He's not 6'7". I think he's a guy you could put on the line, but you could also split him out wide and offer some versatility. The good thing, Ingram, with both these tight ends is that FSU offers everybody a opportunity to work for playing time in their true freshman seasons. However, realistically, the guys who've been in the program 2 and 3 years in Ryan Izzo and Maven Saunders are probably going to be your starters. So with that in mind, you take a look and you say, okay, these guys are going to have some time to develop. They're going to have time to get bigger and stronger and faster and learn the system. And you really got to like not only the talent FSU's bringing in, which is really nice. I mean, one of the best tight end combinations in the nation, but also that they're going to give them the time to develop, because tight end is not a position that you can play early very well, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Why? You got to learn the blocking assignments like a lineman, and you got to learn the routes like a receiver. Those are two difficult tasks, especially in this offense, to combine them and have to do them both. That's a great way to get yelled at a lot at practice, and you just don't see a whole lot of true freshman tight ends balling out. But they're not going to be asked to. They're going to give some time in the system, and they'll develop.
Some time in the system, and you know, look, I think it's not, hopefully it won't be lost on them that what they're looking at is one of the more talented combos that Florida State's had. Really expect the tight end play to be one of Florida State's offensive strengths next year. And as you mentioned, those are kids that have spent 3 years in the program. And if these two guys follow any kind of similar career arc and invest the time and energy that's needed, I think you could have another really strong pair like you will in 2017 as far as what Florida State has to offer. But two nice pieces, two really complimentary prospects, and complimentary prospects, and kids that we may not hear from immediately, but have to have you have a really sense of strong sense of optimism as far as what the future holds of the tight end position.
Absolutely.
Bud, we'll move our focus to the offensive line, and this is a conversation that won't take a whole lot of time. We'll also remind people as to the success that Florida State had in 2016, but as far as what's offered in 2017, let's go ahead and discuss Brady Scott, another kid out of Powder Springs here in the Metro Atlanta area.
Ingram, this will be short. Yeah, the only offensive lineman, Brady Scott. I think he projects as an interior guy. When I took him, I was not really sure about the take. I saw him at, I think, the Clemson game as a visitor, and he was much bigger than I thought he was just on video, so that was good to see. You might ask, look, why did Florida State take only one offensive lineman this year? And there are two reasons. First, they were in on a couple elite offensive tackles and just didn't land them for whatever reason. They were probably only going to take one anyway if they were going to take one. Number two, Florida State signed the number one class of offensive linemen last year in the nation. The answer to improve the offensive line is not by recruiting more than this year. The answer is that you take, what do you have, I think 17 offensive linemen on your roster now. Ryan Hofeld, I think, is going to hang it up, given that he's going to be, I think, third on the depth chart, and he's graduating, probably going to enter the workforce. I don't think he'll be back in 2017. So you got like 17 or 18 offensive linemen on this roster. The answer is in those guys, in developing them, having them be a year older, more competition, have the cream rise to the top. Hopefully you stay healthy as well. It's not necessarily in solving by recruiting a whole bunch more guys this year, because you just can't carry that many on your roster at one time.
But as we position from offense to defense, want to take this time and mentioned our second sponsor, Madison Social. They are the metaphorical longstanding commitment, people who maybe bought into a program that wasn't quite fully formed and believed in us before anybody else. And it was a big step to securing such a great team or a great product and something that we love. And it's just been a great partnership. They always have the finger on the fan base or the pulse of the fan base as much as any restaurant or any grouping of hospitality businesses could. And again, they've been just a great partner with us. They always doing really interesting and creative things. Some of the most recent is pint glasses, kind of celebrating two really elite players on the offense and defense side of the ball. DeMarcus Walker's getting a pint glass that says Mamba Mode. Says Mamba Mode with a really nice picture of him etched onto it. And if you're going to make a pint glass for DeMarcus, damn sure better have one for Dalvin Cook as well. And that just says GOAT with, I think, 4,464 career yards on it, and also has a pretty nice picture of Dalvin. So I would encourage anybody to add those to a collection that a lot of Florida State fans have showed us on social media, and definitely a couple pint glasses that I personally will be picking up as well.
Yeah, man. Madison Social and the For the Table restaurant group with Township and Central as well are kind of like our DJ Matthews or our Cyrus Fagan, right? In that they've been with us for the longest, and they're rock, and we know how important they are to us, and our listenership loves them, and it's a great partnership. When I get home from New York, first I got to go to Houston because I got to go to Nike camp pretty soon. Right after here, I get out of here. And apologies if you hear sirens or garbage trucks or whatever. I'm in a hotel in Midtown. I'm going to drink out of my maybe a couple barley pops out of my Madison Social pint glass. Actually, got the one with a really cool Mark Ziegler quote. A professor I know probably a lot of listeners had at Florida State, and got a nice little collection going myself. So pretty cool. And in addition to great food and drink right there in the shadow of Duke Campbell Stadium, they also really connect with the fan base in a lot of creative ways, and pint glasses are just one of those ways.
Bud, we'll move our conversation for the offensive side and the offensive line to the defensive side, and start with the defensive line. Go ahead and start in the interior. Work our way out. Two prospects that have been committed for a good time, a good amount of time, and Corey Durden, Jalen Parks, both individuals that we've talked about a decent amount, so I would point you to past episodes for more extensive conversation, but two kids out of the Gainesville area, Newberry High School, not the best year for the state of Florida as far as what was offered at the defensive tackle prospect. But these were two of the best. Florida State locked them up early, and they're a very big part of the class today.
Yes, indeed. Outside of Gainesville, Newberry High School, like you said, stone to throw away from the stadium, and thanks to Odell Higgins' great recruiting and Park's dad living down the hallway from him in the players' dorm in the 80s, and the fact that Durden is his cousin, this all came together beautifully, and the Gators are probably not too happy about losing two guys this caliber. Durden is the taller, bigger frame guy. Now, he's not unathletic by any means. He just this morning, he put out a video of him dunking.
Saw that. That's a nice little good for that guy. Always fun to watch a massive individual dribble a ball in the open court, but he handled it well, and he definitely threw it down.
Yeah, that's 6'4", 330 or 320 or whatever he is, lumbering down the court, and then and then getting up there to throw it down, and it was a dunk. It was solid.
Yep.
In transition, so that was good. Jalen Parks is your little higher rated guy. Not that I think that Durden's not good. I think Durden's very good, by the way, with a lot of potential and upside. Hell, I actually think Durden could play offensive tackle if you wanted him to. Parks is really athletic, a guy who's a little bit smaller frame. I think he projects nicely as like a 3 or 5 technique in this defense. Will they play immediately? Not necessarily, but you know, you're going to lose several guys next year, probably to the draft. And so in 2018, Parks is going to be a second-year player. Durden's going to be a second-year player. Both these guys could certainly be called on to play quite a bit. Two top signings for FSU here.
All right, Bud, good breakdown on the two kids from Gainesville, but let's go ahead and move the conversation to the man of the hour, certainly the biggest piece that fell Florida State's way today, Marvin Wilson, the kid that we've talked about for a long time, hell of an effort out of Odell Haggins and Tim Brewster, but the 6'4", 330-pound defensive tackle out of Houston made it official today around 4:35 that he's headed to Tallahassee, and with that really put a cap on what's otherwise been a really successful class for Florida State.
Yes. Such an important get for FSU in a cycle that they needed to add another elite defensive tackle. You have to keep loading up on talented bodies at that position. And I'm glad you said Odell's name first, There's no doubt Tim Brewster is FSU's recruiting ace. Absolutely. But Odell deserves, I think, more credit for this recruitment. I think it was his long-term relationship with Marvin Wilson that really kind of locked this thing up, and it was built over time, and it was a relationship built on trust. And we said it, man. The last time Odell lost a kid like this that he had like a long-term relationship with, multiple visits to campus to see Odell, was like Marvin Austin, and we know what happened there, right? UNC got in trouble for that.
Google John Blake, Marvin Austin. Yes.
Yeah. Hell, Google John Blake.
Black Santa?
I think that was a term that he was called at one point. Yeah.
I believe that was his nickname, certainly. Yeah.
So, look, recruiting is an intense game. It's a high-stakes game, and in this time, Florida State won. And I do think a large part of that was due to Odell's relationship. FSU was confident. Okay, I would say they were optimistic they were going to get him, right? At least as far as I know. Today, I think that was sort of cautious optimism. I know that you had a report that, you know, from your sources, maybe it was a little more nervous than even ESPN portrayed.
Yeah, I think people. You know, look, the staff probably almost mirrored the fan base's emotion to an extent. Probably went to bed last night more confident than necessarily when they woke up, and then maybe were a little bit shaken to go 1-for-4 on the first kids that were undecided. A lot of people were really confident that Marvin Wilson was headed to their particular school, and I don't think anybody was certain until he ended up taking off that hoodie this afternoon to reveal a nice old school looking Florida State logo. So this one, I'm pretty confident that this one went down to the wire and was not a situation where Florida State brought the media into the room. Now, to be fair, they announced earlier that they weren't going to do that in general for this announcement, although I think you would have seen the media go into the war room if Levi Jones had been a more sure thing, but I ramble there. But it was a back and forth, and completely agree. Florida State won at the end, won in all likelihood to the efforts of Brewster and to a larger part Haggins, and it's a big get. Number 2 defensive tackle in the country, largest prospect, uncommitted going into today, and is just another sign of what Florida State can do on the recruiting trail right now. And as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, look, anytime you go into a state outside of Florida and sign the number one kid, that's a big deal. Anytime those states happen to be Virginia, Maryland, North Carolina, I mean, those are major talent producing states. Texas, right up there with Florida and California as the most influential state in recruiting. So that is a massive get for them. And congratulations to all involved. It was not an easy effort.
No, it certainly wasn't. Let's talk real quickly about the player that FSU's getting in Marvin Wilson. I mean, 6'4", 330 pounds, a real force. Does he project as a 1 or a 3? And 1 is more your nose guard, 3 is more your like Eddie Goldman role. Look, the competition he plays is not real good, but he does destroy it like you would expect it to. It's one of the more fun highlight films to watch out there. I'll say this. I think if Wilson sheds some of the baby fat that he's carrying around, he actually has the potential to be an elite level 3 technique. I do like his burst off the ball, sometimes hampered, I think, by some conditioning issues here, at least when he was at the Under Armour game. This can be a really good player. He's got heavy hands. His change of direction is kind of like what you would think it would be for a 6'4", 330-pound high school kid, but that's not necessarily his game. I do think he offers the ability to be a really high-level run stopper, to be a penetrator, a disruptor. But also, I think there's some pass rush upside there, especially if he gets down to kind of more in that, you know, like 305, 310 range, which I think he should probably be as a college freshman. The hands are heavy and violent, needs to bring them more consistently. I'm sure Odell will work on him to gain more moves. And I tell you, you know, guys in Odell's system do seem to get consistently better year after year, right? Like that, That's not true for all positions, but with Odell's guys, you don't see a lot of them who are like, okay, well, he's just as good now as he was as a freshman. Timmy Jernigan got better. Eddie Goldman, I think, got better to the extent that he actually kept playing hard as a junior. Noddy's much better now.
Seen a real progression through Noddy. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Christmas was better this year when he was healthy than he was the previous year. So that's encouraging too, right? Marvin Wilson has a lot of potential, and I think Odell has a good history of getting guys to get close to their potential, which is what you want out of a coach, and a really nice job of recruiting by him this year.
Bud, we'll move our attention to defensive end. All right, first kid I want to just start the conversation with is Josh Kando, a five-star prospect out of IMG, more appropriately out of the Maryland area. But at this point, it doesn't really matter. He signed Tallahassee and is on campus currently. So he's a massive part of this class. Five stars on most services, and a guy that when you combine all the physical skills and the upside that he has with the idea that Brad Lawing is going to be coaching him, an individual that has a chance to have a really special career in his time or during his time in Tallahassee.
Absolutely. I mean, a frame, burst, technique, drive, smarts, wants to be an orthopedic surgeon. He's 6'6", 250. I think he'll be 275 within 20 months. Or 270 at least. I has gotten so much better in the last year compared to what I thought he was as a junior. At one point in his career, he was rated as the number one player in the country. He finishes on 247 as the number nine player in the country. I mean, the number nine player in the nation. Mm-hmm. This guy's a stud. LeVar Arrington lost his mind when he saw Kando just blasting these offensive tackles at the Under Armour game. You can actually go on our Facebook page, Tomahawk Nation, and check out. Arrington like jumps on this guy's back, and Kando mm-hmm. makes Arrington look like a little kid. And Arrington was a pretty big dude in his own right back in the day. He's lost a little bit of weight now. I think that the comparison was made to Jason Pierre-Paul, and I don't know if he has quite the same get off as Pierre-Paul, but I think he actually might have a little bit bigger frame. And I like the comparison. That's an extremely talented player, but look, I think Kando has similar potential. Hopefully he doesn't blow his hand up with fireworks like Pierre-Paul did, obviously.
Yep.
But, yeah, he wants to be an orthopedic surgeon, so hopefully he's smart enough not to do that. Just a great signing for FSU, man. Brad Lawing, the defensive ends coach, has got to be so happy.
He's got to be thrilled. I mean, this is just one of the best pieces that you could hope to hand to him. Actually talked to somebody a couple days ago that is in the Columbia, South Carolina media market, and just told me stories about Lawing and his time there and how much impact he had on Clowney, and just nothing that I didn't know as far as how good of a position coach he is and how impactful he can be in kids' development. But a really special piece that Florida State has as far as who their defensive end coach is, and giving him quite the prospect to work with in Kando, and a five-star kid and somebody that you could see on the field pretty quickly.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, man. A guy with some serious ability to, I think, stop the run and the pass, man. Just a lot of talent.
But let's go ahead and shift our focus to Trey Lawson, a kid out of North Augusta, South Carolina, three-star prospect, four-star prospect, depending on the service that you look at. But a really interesting prospect in his own right. 6'6", 6'5", 6'6", 250 pounds as a senior in high school. A kid that may not be somebody that you see immediately, but could very well develop into his grow into his body and be a prospect that is a prospect that grew far to a much greater piece than maybe the three-star ranking would indicate. Trey Lawson, not somebody that is going to be a five-star kid, but a pretty special piece of defensive end in and of his own right.
Ingram, are you trying to say he's one of those high upside three-stars that we talked about?
I think you did a really good job of framing that out for us. If you want to take a three-star kid, you want to take a three-star kid that has the potential to be a starter, and Lawson has the potential. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a guaranteed thing, but a kid who has a higher ceiling than necessarily what his three-star ranking would show.
Frame, athleticism, aggression, physicality. I like all checks those boxes there. You know, make sure the grades are right. Keep the head on straight. Get in. Work hard. Understand, look, it may take a year or two to really get on the field. Don't get discouraged by that. Keep grinding. And you could have a damn good football player on your hands here in Trey Lawson. I'm definitely excited about that one. Former Tennessee commit. And I got to tell you, one of the players that people I know connected to the Tennessee program back when he was committed there, they was like, look, Tennessee has all these three stars. This Trey Lawson kid is one of the ones they think should definitely be a four star. And then he decommitted and then went to Florida State. So good news there.
Yeah, that didn't end up too well for him.
No.
All right, bud, the linebacker conversation will begin with a JUCO prospect or a prep school prospect that's already on campus and somebody who has a chance to make significant contributions next year. That would be Adonis Thomas, 6'3", 225, 230, college-ready body, and somebody that hopefully lives up to his name and will be a really solid addition at a place that Florida State has needed some consistency. And linebacker Adonis Thomas is somebody that that you could see on the field sooner than later. I believe he has three to play three. Is that correct?
Yes, correct, because he redshirted at Alabama before he left for junior college. Now, he did not leave for JUCO due to grades or anything, right? He had good grades still. He just didn't, I guess, like his chances of getting on the field very well. And, you know, maybe think somewhere else would be a better fit. And that's Florida State's benefit. I think they're getting a quality football player in Adonis Thomas, a guy who is going to hopefully provide you immediate depth in year one. I think he has the ability to be an inside linebacker for you, a thumper against the run, and offer some coverage ability. Now, after this year, Matt Thomas graduates, or Derek Hoskins graduates. You don't know what you're going to get from SKL. You don't know if Purifoy is going to be around because he's never really returned to form after that devastating ankle injury. That means Adonis Thomas might be one of your only upperclassmen there in 2018 at the linebacker position. So that's certainly an upside play right there, along with, you know, a guy like Dontavius Jackson and Emmett Rice. Thomas would be the oldest because he'd be, you know, a fourth year junior in 2018. This is a guy who could potentially be a 2-year starter for you at Florida State, and to get that out of the junior college ranks, a guy who has grades, was able to get into the program, get in early, I think that's a big deal.
All right, bud. Florida State went into the day with two linebacker prospects on the board. Went 1-for-2, added Leonard Warner, prospect out of Metro Atlanta area here. Kid, as a lot of people are familiar, Stanford was one of the major players in his recruitment. Georgia, various schools throughout the Southeast, but I'd say the three biggest were Georgia, Stanford, Florida State. Georgia, it sounds like very possibly could have filled up on their class or their slots available. And once that became not an option, Florida State may well have won this recruiting base or this recruiting battle without any help. But once that help was lended, it became pretty clear that Tallahassee was his ultimate destination and a really good get for Florida State, somebody that you saw at camp, somebody that we talked about a decent amount over the course of the summer, but a nice addition and a big body that's pretty versatile.
Indeed. Look, everybody looks at Leonard Warner and they think, okay, big time, athletic, talented, physical guy. And I agree. I think the most apt comparison here, and Warner, 4-star, I don't know what his final like numerical rating was, but certainly I think one of your, probably one, you know, a top 20 type linebacker nationally. I would compare him somewhat to a Christian Jones in that I like his length in terms of the ability to set the edge against the run. But he's also a little bit better in coverage than you would think. He's got some real athleticism in him, and that's encouraging. For, you know, when you play all these spread teams, you got to have backers who can cover. That's a very nice get for Florida State, and they absolutely had to have it. As you mentioned earlier, when they missed on Levi Jones, it made Warner signing all the more important. This ends up being a solid linebacker class for them. Ingram, I really believe that FSU's linebacker fortunes are changing in a hurry. With Matthew Thomas and Derek Hoskins coming back, with Dontavius Jackson and Emmett Rice and Josh Brown and Adonis Thomas now in and early enrolled. That's a heck of a group of linebackers. I expect Florida State to have elite-level linebacker play next year.
Yeah, really good add. A lot of nice pieces. Warner, as you mentioned, a big physical body that is not necessarily a major liability when it comes to pass coverage. Also nice for Florida State to have, you know, some minor presence in the city of Atlanta. You don't necessarily have to or have expectations that they're going to go up there and dominate by any means. But whenever you're located that close to one of the major population producing, you know, Atlanta's right there on par with Dallas, Houston, and Miami when it comes to production of talent. Atlanta is probably over-recruited when it comes to how many staffs try to have a presence there. But good to have a little foothold, and maybe if it means signing two kids every 3 years or something like that, it's nice for Florida State to be able to go up into Atlanta and get a kid like that. So on the whole, completely agree with you. I think Florida State's linebacking fortunes have turned, have a lot of depth. Hopefully you start to see that play out on the field next year. But I completely agree with you. I think it is a very reasonable expectation that Florida State's linebackers are one of the strengths of the defense and should be one of the strengths of the defense next year. We'll move our attention to the secondary. Go ahead and start out at cornerback. No better place than to begin the conversation with a legacy, Sanford Samuels III, five-star prospect, four-star, five-star, depending on where you look. But one of the nation's better defensive back prospects and very much kind of a bell cow is probably a term that's overused, but one of the recruits that very quickly turned into a recruiter, and he's also an early enrollee, so he's been able to have an impactful role on some of the official visits that have taken place since he's been on campus. So an incredible prospect in his own right, but has also been a pretty significant piece as far as contributing to ultimately what his class looks like come today. So somebody that I just wanted to point out, been a major contributor both as to what this class looks like as far as him calling kids and playing an ambassador role on social media, but also just being the prospect that he is, being a 4 or 5 star prospect. And you know, that matters to some kids. You kind of need that anchor prospect in each class to go ahead and get that confidence going and letting kids know that they're going to play with other elite prospects. And Samuels very much served that role as well.
He did. That's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. Samuels, very quickly here, his dad will tell you that the younger is a much better player at the same age than his father was. Length, athleticism, feet, hips, aggression, confidence. He's 6'2". He's the number 4 rated corner in the country. I'd put him up there really with any of those guys. I think he's an excellent prospect. He got in early. We know he's a hard worker. He played both ways in high school for Flanagan. Won a state title as a junior. Man, just an excellent football player and going to be a huge addition for FSU. We've written about him a lot. We've spoken about him a lot. Just a guy who, that's a kind of legacy you got to get in your program. I know they missed on Devin Bush Jr. last year, but look, this is the kid who was the real stud at Flanagan. All right.
Right.
The two legacies. This is the dude, and you got him. And you're right. He definitely helped you land guys like Cam Akers and Kane Doe and LeBourne and all those guys. That was big.
All right, bud, we started our conversation with one of the prospects, one of the defensive back prospects that have been committed the longest in Samuels. We'll move to one of the more recent additions. That is Ontario Wilson, defensive back out of Ashburn, Georgia, teammates with Tamorian Terry, who we spoke of previously. If Terry was somewhat under the radar, Wilson was wildly under the radar. And Florida State staff, I'll give them credit here, not only did they do their homework and find a guy that others didn't. they also kind of strategically deployed the scholarship offer in a manner that let them kind of maximize their own work that they put into it, and did so in a manner that maybe made it a little bit too late for anybody else to really be able to make a push for Wilson. So not only did they find him, they did a great job of not alerting and being free scouting university that we talk about all the time. And Wilson is a prospect that if you talk to people in that part of Georgia, they have a lot of really positive things to say for him, and a guy that might not have been known, but has a chance to have a pretty significant career during his time in Tallahassee.
Yeah. I think Wilson's a pretty talented kid. Now, I don't know if he's superstar talented. We'll have to see. I'm most encouraged, Ingram, I think, by his height. I think he's legitimately over 6 foot after seeing some pictures at the signing day ceremony with him and Tamorian Terry. We know Terry is a verified 6'4", and so I don't think Wilson's one of these guys who's listed at 6 foot and is actually 5'10". I think he's a true 6 foot. And when you take that and you combine it with the athleticism and moves that and skills that he shows on his huddle, his highlight video, I think that's an interesting prospect. I'm not going to put any sort of ceiling on this kid. I don't know what he'll become, but I do think that's a great job of a quality find by FSU, and a guy who, if he had gone to a lot of camps, if he'd played a lot of 7-on-7, if he was a little more refined in his technique, maybe, you know, maybe could have been rated as a 4-star.
Georgia is just, there's parts of Georgia that are so rural. I think people forget that Georgia's the largest state that's east of the Mississippi. Georgia also has this kind of archaic, well, it's not an archaic rule, but it was their counties were created in a manner in which theoretically you should be able to reach the town seat on like horseback within a 3.5-hour ride or something like that. Basically, that was put into the state constitution or was dictated as these counties were created. So Georgia is a massive state as far as its size goes, and it also has more counties than any other state than Texas because of this horse and buggy time that the counties were created. So long-winded way of saying that there's parts of Georgia, particularly southwest Georgia, that is so remote and so lacking of population that kids can kind of fall through the cracks. And Wilson and Terry are good examples of that.
Ingram, how big of a city do you think we have to get to in Georgia around Ashburn, which is where they're from, Turner County, before people would recognize where this is? I want to name some off. Tell me when you think I should stop, all right? This is impromptu, folks, so Ingram does not know I'm about to do this. All right, Arabi.
No.
Sycamore.
Probably not.
Irwinville.
No.
Sylvester.
Maybe.
Rochelle.
Probably not.
Cordell.
Yes.
Yeah, I think.
Well, and I'm being generous there. You're but from Cordell Georgia. Also because of the highway. But yeah, Cordell would be the first place that most people would probably have some type of idea. And again, I'm a kid who's from Georgia and spent a lot of time in Albany when I was younger, so I'm probably even more familiar with that area than most. But that's the first place that I would say that just your might resonate or might ring a bell with most people.
All right, to describe this to folks, if you're heading up I-10, right, you pass Adel, you pass Tifton, before you hit Cordell, that's where Turner County is. It's about, what, 25, 35 miles east of Albany? It's on 75. So that's where this place is. There's not a lot around there. I mean, Macon's probably an hour north.
It's remote and it's not a place that many people are going to find themselves, but Florida State did, and they got two great prospects. So something that we're excited about, something I'm excited about, and we'll see what comes of Wilson. All right, bud, we'll move our attention to Cyrus Fagan, really kind of rangy center field prospect, center field-like as far as his ability to play safety. 4-star prospect, 6'2", 180, 185. A kid that not necessarily a banner prospect. Might have flown a little bit under the radar just because of how early he committed with some in the fan base, but a significant piece. And a guy that has a chance to come into the program and contribute somewhat early. I would put him as perhaps the most likely at the safety position.
I totally agree with you, man. A guy who's a true center field prospect out of Daytona Mainland. I think he's a guy, look, has the range, has the instincts, has the size, just an excellent safety prospect. I think they ended up rating him number 12 safety prospect in the country. I've seen a lot of these kids. This is a pretty good year for safeties. But I don't know that I would necessarily take Malik Gray over him, the kid who stuck with Tennessee. You know, I don't know that I would take some of these kids over him. I think some of these kids are different types of prospects as well. May end up playing corner. But, you know, for a pretty deep safety year, the number 12 safety in the country, the number 18 player in the state, still a top 100 player nationally. I think that says something right there.
Mm-hmm.
There are 12 safeties rated in the top 96 players nationally this year. That's a lot of depth, man. Fagan's an excellent signing for Florida State, and a guy who I really don't think ever wavered very much, despite the Miami rumors.
No, Fagan's a great addition, undoubtedly, and a prospect who has a chance to see the field earlier than others. We'll move next to a legacy, second legacy of the class, linebacker out of Tampa, Florida, Daquelon Brooks, Derek Brooks' son, and a guy who certainly helped that his father was who he was, but a guy that was offered a scholarship as part of this class, and a guy who can fill a role, fill a need, perhaps project as a little bit more, maybe a more rangy Nate Andrews. But Bud, just give us your thoughts on what Florida State's getting in Daquelon Brooks.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison. I do think that they're getting a player. Look, obviously Derek Brooks' son. That's a big part of it, I think. But a player they obviously believe can play at Florida State. I think he's going to play that Nate Andrews role, which is, you know, an interesting role that they use as kind of that sixth man on the defense. And we'll see what he can do. Certainly a high-energy guy.
Hamza Nasruldeen, a prospect out of Concord, North Carolina, just north of Charlotte. Actually went to J. Graham's High School. If you look at some of the quotes, that appeared to play a significant role, or at least a strong role in his decision. A guy that could very much be a safety, a hard-hitting safety, a guy that could give great run support, but also is really athletic and not necessarily a liability in pass coverage. Or he's a guy who could potentially grow into an outside linebacker, but a really nice piece that Florida State was able to add. Decommitted from Carolina about 3 weeks before signing day, 2 weeks before signing day, and immediately joined Florida State's class. But a really great pull out of the state of North Carolina, and a strong trend that Florida State had in this class was signing state's top players, and Nasruldeen is the number one player at the state of North Carolina.
He is. Ingram, I've seen him in person now, both out of pads in a camp setting and then in pads in game settings, both high school and in an all-star settings. And I tell you what, I like this kid the more and more I watch him. And everybody assumes mm-hmm. because he's 6'4 and a half that he's going to have to end up playing linebacker. But I'm not so sure. I think he could play kind of a hybrid role in the defense. He's a guy that just keeps making plays and keeps making interceptions, not just big hits. That's a good sign to me. You know, I like that. Obviously, people want to make the Pat Watkins comparison, both guys who were tall. I don't know if I totally see that, but I mean,
BJ Ward, would you compare him to him at all?
Yeah, mm-hmm. certainly. You know, I think it's very rare to have that length, and when you're playing all these spread offenses, we know how much Jimbo Fisher's secondary wants length. And guess what? FSU is so good, it can do it. It can require that length. A lot of these schools mess up because all they want is measurables, and measurables are important, but not at the expense of a kid who can play. We hear it from, you know, the high school coaches all the time. Hey, why don't you look at my kid? He's not big enough. Well, look, Florida State doesn't have to look at your kid if he's not mm-hmm. big enough, because they can get a kid who can play who is big enough. A lot of these schools can't. Florida State in Hamza is getting a guy who can do both. You know, that whole meme, you know, get you somebody who can do both. That's mm-hmm. that's kind of Hamza. He's got the size and he's got the athleticism.
get you somebody that can do both indeed. Bud, I believe that'll be our bring about an end to tonight's podcast. Hopefully this was a thorough review. People were able to take something out of this where we gave them at least devoted a certain amount of time to every kid that Florida State signed. This has been a really fun class to follow. Thoroughly enjoyed doing these recruiting podcasts with you. And when I think back about some of the conversations that we had in summer and the final product that has now been put into ink today and this evening, it's a hell of a class and really something that will play a large role in what Florida State football looks like moving forward. Always want to thank our sponsors, Louisiana Hot Sauce, for the table group, been instrumental in us being able to put together a product like this and certainly the consistency that we've been able to do it. Want to always thank you as the listener for all that you've made possible. And anytime you get a chance to share this, whether it be via social media or word of mouth, we are always very appreciative. So
obviously, as we go into the off season, continued support for that. And as always, we ask you all to support our sponsors and support us by giving us those nice 5-star ratings on iTunes. That does help, and that helps more people find our podcast. More listeners is good news for us.
And with that, we'll bring about tonight's podcast to an end. Thank you for listening, and hopefully you guys have enjoyed the coverage that we provided on the 2017 class. Marvin, he was a friend of mine, and he could sing a song. His heart in every line. Marvin, Marvin, sang of the joy and pain. He opened up our minds, and I still can hear him say.